Okay, I think we're ready, Carlin. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the February 26th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Why don't you read I think we can read all of the items, right? There's no reason to not take this up as a package, you think?
Plus, Commissioner Saltzman's recused from one of them.
That's right. All right, then let's not take them up as a package. Let's start with 225. We are not voting today.
Yeah, so.
Patrick, any reason to not read them all and let the testimony cover them? One presentation, that's what I thought. Go ahead, let's read them all, please.
Read them all.
Item 225, approve the 11th Amendment to the Central East Side Urban Renewal Plan to add plan area and projects, extend the duration of the plan, and increase the maximum indebtedness. 226, approve the termination of the Education Urban Renewal Area Plan. 227, adopt the 4th Amendment to the North McAdam Urban Renewal Plan to add to the plan area, add projects, and extend the time frame of the plan. 228, approve the 11th Amendment to the Airport Way Urban Renewal Plan to reduce plan area by approximately 970.5 acres. 229, approve the 2nd Amendment to the Willamette Industrial Urban Renewal Plan to cease collections of tax increment. And 230, approve the 4th Amendment to the amended and restated River District Urban Renewal Plan to reduce plan area by approximately 36.4 acres.
Great, thank you. Let me reset the context. I know some of you have been involved in these discussions for some time, and we as a council have been talking about this package for almost a year now. The purpose of this group of ordinances is to right-size our city's urban renewal areas, something which has never really been attempted as a comprehensive effort, and that's what this is about. Obviously, urban renewal used well is a great and powerful tool. It's done a lot of great things for our cities. It's created livable neighborhoods. It's created a lot of employment opportunity, and it, in theory, it develops sufficient new property values to pay back the cost of the city's investment in infrastructure that we need to make this place great. We have used this tool very successfully, and in fact, in some cases, that theory is starting to be realized. That is, that there are places in the city where we can now declare victory and put property back on the tax rolls to pay property taxes into the city's general fund, the county's general fund, and the common school fund, like the rest of the real estate in the city of Portland does. When I first took office, I asked the Portland Development Commission to re-examine the boundaries, the duration, and the purpose of all of our existing urban renewal areas, 11 of them and six neighborhood prosperity initiative areas. In May of last year, I brought to the council proposed amendments to six of these urban renewal areas, and the council then affirmed that direction and asked for more public outreach and a package that does the following: reduces the impact on taxing jurisdictions, helps Portland State thrive, and provides resources for affordable housing. Those were the three things that we as a council said as we refine and develop this package. Those are the three things we want to do: reduce the impacts on the taxing jurisdictions, help Portland State, and support affordable housing. Throughout the summer and fall of last year, we had a committee, and we're going to hear from some of them this afternoon, that met to work on this package, and a majority of the committee supported it with only a minor change. Patrick Quinton will be walking us through the package here shortly, but I'm really pleased with the results. First of all, this package will put $800 million of assessed value back on the tax rolls. Let me say that again, $800 million of assessed value, going from urban renewal area sequestration back into general taxation paying for public services. And in fact, that's already paying dividends to the city and the county and the school district's budgets. This package will increase resources for affordable housing and advance the implementation of our affordable housing goals. And it will help achieve the potential of South Waterfront and the new MAX station areas in the Central East Side. One of the other things that I've done as mayor is, frankly, when I arrived here, I found that we were behind the curve on planning for the light rail station areas that accompany the new Orange Line, and the Planning Bureau has accelerated its work to, in effect, synchronize with this effort to take in new area in the Central East Side that will obviously be radically affected by the presence of a billion-dollar light rail line in what was before not so well transit-served a part of our city. So with that, let me invite Patrick Quinton up to make his presentation, and then we'll take testimony from people on the committee who have come here today to report on their work.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. Good afternoon, commissioners. And yes, my name is Patrick Quinton. I'm the executive director of the Portland Development Commission, and I'm here to provide some more detail on the proposed amendments to the to six urban renewal areas. I just want to highlight I'm joined by a variety of people who can be quite helpful in the conversation, so that if at any point we want to talk about specific numbers, whatever, we have people that I can bring up. As the mayor mentioned and kind of summarized in a nice way, we are here to revisit. One second. There we go. To revisit the direction that council provided last May. So, as the mayor mentioned, and he highlighted these three specific goals about reducing the impact of urban renewal, supporting PSU, and preserving our investments in affordable housing and other development outcomes. And so we're here today to report back on how the proposed changes to their renewal areas deliver on that. And as you can see, just at a high level, we believe this package delivers on that. So as the mayor mentioned, we have dollars returning to the taxing jurisdictions. You'll see in detail the increases in investments in affordable housing in a variety of districts, but also some of the other development outcomes that we're going to be able to achieve with these changes. And then finally, we'll report on the development agreement that we have executed with Portland State, delivering on our kind of shared objectives for our major university here in Portland. But that work obviously is dependent on your action on the urban renewal areas. So the mayor talked about the timeline. We came to you, well, the mayor has been talking about this as a priority of his since he took office. We did background work on this and brought to City Council last May the proposed changes. You passed a resolution directing us to go back and get more public input to refine the proposal and then bring it back to council. And so we're here. But just wanted to highlight some of the major steps that have happened. We convened an advisory committee. I'll show you the composition of that. I'll show you that as well as the public outreach that we've done in a second. But we've also met on multiple times with the Planning and Sustainability Commission. And you see they took action in January. I believe you have a correspondence from them. Their recommendations in forwarding that to you. And we've also met with the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. As I mentioned, we did extensive public outreach. So in addition to convening the Urban Renewal Area Amendment Advisory Committee and developing recommendations from them, we developed a housing subgroup from that so that we could deal specifically with questions around affordable housing. We've also used the current process around the Southeast Quadrant Plan to brief the folks in that community, stakeholders in that community, and talk about how this does overlap with the work that's going on around the comprehensive plan. And then you can see the extensive list of organizations that we've met with to talk specifically about the changes and what it means for these communities. And so what came out of the public input process is what you'll see today. It's the refinement of the proposal that we brought to you last May. And so we started with boundaries. So the advisory committee, as well as some of our other conversations with stakeholders, helped us finalize the new boundaries for four of the urban renewal areas. Two were expanding, two were shrinking. We've obviously had a significant amount of feedback on the objectives around affordable housing, with particular focus on the North McAdam Urban Renewal Area. I'll talk about that in a second. And I know there's lots of testimony that you're going to hear later on today, and they can shed light on those conversations. As I mentioned, we completed our negotiations with PSU around a disposition development agreement. So our plan for moving forward with them is clear, but it is dependent on the approval of changes to the North McAdam Urban Renewal Area and the Education Urban Renewal Area. And then lastly, you have all the documentation in front of you. So the proposal we brought to you in May didn't have that information, and so you can now see the detail behind that. So I'm going to quickly walk through these changes again. I know you're familiar with these changes. For those who are seeing this for the first time, though, I want to make sure everybody knows the package of changes. So there's one group which is we're reducing or eliminating four districts. So Airport Way, basically a closed district. It has excess acreage that we can release, and so we're releasing 40% of the assessed value in that district. Once again, Airport Way, closed district. It has some remaining assets, and as Mayor Hales pointed out, one of the districts that is already returning substantial tax dollars to the taxing jurisdictions. The second reduction is in River District. The River District has the most assessed value of any of our urban renewal areas. It does have excess assessed value relative to our projected maximum indebtedness. And so based on our work with the city's debt management office, we've determined we can release 26% of the assessed value in that district. That returns immediate tax money to the taxing jurisdictions. And we're actually already doing that. So we've for this fiscal year, we're actually not collecting the property tax revenue associated with that reduced area. Willamette Industrial, we are, for all intents and purposes, shutting that urban renewal area down. The technical way we are doing that to allow us to continue to invest the remaining assets is to stop collecting new tax revenues. So we haven't been collecting tax revenues from what we call Waiura. We have the remaining dollars that we're going to use to support the manufacturing community that remains in on both sides of the Willamette, and then we've ceased, kind of taken away the authority to issue any more debt within that district. And then the last one is the elimination of the Education Urban Renewal Area. As you know, 35 acres of that will shift to the North McAdam Urban Renewal Area under that proposed expansion. So this action effectively shuts down the Education Urban Renewal Area and will take away any opportunity to issue new debt. As we'll show later on in the projections, the long-term tail of the Education Urban Renewal Area provides a significant amount of the return back to the taxing jurisdictions. We basically eliminate another kind of 15 years of urban renewal that was associated with that. And then we have two urban renewal areas that we propose to both to expand and extend the last day to issue debt. On the Central East side, you can see on the map it's a minor expansion to pull in what is referred to as the Clinton Triangle, but it really is the new station area that will result when the Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail Max Line opens up next year. We believe this particular area has a significant amount of development potential, but it does require public investment to realize that potential. The district also has some additional needs in that southern end of the district that we believe could use additional public investment, and of course we want to continue to invest in affordable housing. So in addition to the expansion of the area, we also want to extend the life of the district by 5 years. And then there's expansion of North McAdam, which, as I mentioned, will expand by 45 acres. Most of that acreage is coming from what is now in the Education Urban Renewal Area. This expansion allows us to pull in a substantial part of the area associated with PSU's activities so that we can support the university's growth, but in particular take advantage of the growth in commercial activity, whether it be business or real estate related activity around the university. We also propose to extend the last day to issue debt in the district by 5 years. And what this does is it allows us to access the full maximum indebtedness that was established for the district. Under current projections, we would not come close to accessing that. And as you'll see in a minute, this unlocks a substantial pool of resources for us to accomplish a variety of objectives in North McAdam that include supporting the growth of OHSU, obviously continuing to meet our affordable housing goals, as well as support other commercial development and provide the infrastructure to support that development.
Where are the 10 acres that, excuse me, where are the 10 acres that are not currently in the education district, and why are we adding those?
So the if you look in the map, it's the red, so you, there's the yellow acreage, and then the red acreage is the additional acreage. These end up being kind of islands that were left out, but they do have importance. They contain commercial property that we believe has potential for redevelopment, and you know, one of the goals in expanding the district is to make sure that we pull in enough taxable commercial property to support the work we're doing. And so these red areas are commercial areas that actually have, but you know, like I said, development potential.
Why weren't they in the education URI?
I think because the education area or urban renewal area had a focus that was on the other half of the area in yellow, and so we didn't want to. I think we had an amount that we wanted to put in the education urban renewal area, and so they didn't make the cut initially. But as we were working our way up from the North MAC side, we were able to pull those in.
And what's that?
I believe that they. I'm sorry. I'm going to ask. Those are OHSU properties or our office.
Offices,
yeah. So these are offices that have supported. I think an example is OHSU leased space in there for some of their commercialization activities. So there were things going on there that related to what was happening either at OHSU or PSU, and that's one of the reasons why we wanted to pull them in.
But they wouldn't be paying taxes if they're OHSU PSU, right?
Well, there's combination, and if it's private, if there are private companies there, if they're somehow spinning out of OHSU, they would pay taxes.
And what's that white island between the yellow and the red?
So that's that is University Place. That is the, I'm sorry, is that?
Yeah.
That's University Place. That's part of North McAdam. It's already part of North McAdam. So the white parts are already part of North McAdam urban renewal area.
So University Place was already an island.
It was already, yeah, that was a part of an earlier amendment, as is the other finger going up, which is how North McAdam expanded to build out the streetcar line.
Thank you.
And so when you, as the mayor mentioned, these six changes are being brought as a package because as a package, we can deliver on the goals that were established for this work, and one of the goals was to reduce the impact of urban renewal on the taxing jurisdictions, and this summarizes the total gain, but it breaks out the financial impact for the changes to each of these urban renewal areas. Lot in here, we've walked these numbers in the past, but just the highlights are: if you go to the right column, you can see that the total gain to the taxing jurisdictions over this time period in nominal dollars is just under $200 million. When you do present value on that, it's about $88 million. The gains come from the areas that we reduce. So the gains are delivered primarily by River District, Willamette Industrial, and the closure of the education renewal area. The gains that we obtain through those reductions allow us to expand Central East Side and North McAdam and extend those districts, and then you get the net effect of a positive return to taxing jurisdictions. You can also see on the top from a time series that you get an immediate bump from these actions, and it's only in basically 10 years out that we begin to go negative again. That's a time period when North McAdam would have normally ended its original life, and so there is a negative effect, and then we pick up once again positive impact of the taxing jurisdictions after that.
So Patrick, that's important, at least to those of us who plan on serving another 15 years, and we're looking at the impact of this on the city's general fund. So I pulled up the old chart we got on that when you gave our last presentation, and that's in December. Are those numbers still current, or have they changed?
These are current numbers.
This is by URA. Are the benefit impact to taxing jurisdictions city, county, school funds.
So that's the next slide. So I can switch to that slide if you want to focus on.
Beat me to it.
On that now. So the numbers change for a variety of reasons. One of them is just as we get new numbers from the assessor, we then update the projections on that. But then the other thing that may be different, and with back in December, would he have had ones with the development agreement in it, right? So the other thing, these assumptions are based on no development agreement with ZRZ in North McAdam.
So the next slide, I guess, is the one I was alluding to.
Yeah.
So, and I just want to highlight between today and 2030. So that's just looking at it over the next, whatever, 15, 16 years. The net, if take away the present value, because I don't know how to calculate that, it looks like something close to $5 or $6 million net to us between now and 2030. Is that about right?
Over that time period, that's what the math works out to.
And what practically does it mean to show a negative number between 26 and 30 across the board? So that means
that just means based on what the city or any of the other taxing jurisdictions would have received under the current scenario, meaning URA is closing down according to their current schedule, this is the change relative to that position. We don't know what the city's general fund revenues are going to be, so it doesn't make any predictions about the overall state of city tax revenues. This is just the number relative to the current scenario.
So just to be clear, the bulk of the benefit to us really doesn't kick in until after 2030, and that's because in the short term we actually have to pay off some debt.
So the reduction in the four URAs that I talked about is, you know, it's material, but it's not an overwhelming number.
It's about 5 and 6 million over 15 years. It's not insignificant, but the real money, according to this, kicks in after 2030.
Right, so that's when the urban renewal areas close down. So what I was going to get to is, so this is when all these areas are now shutting down until you have the return to the tax rolls of everything on urban renewal. So you have the result of all of the investments that we've made in these districts now finally coming back to the taxing jurisdictions.
But how much of that is attributed to these amendments, and how much of that is attributed to what would happen already because of districts closing down?
Well, it's simply a function of how much money gets invested. So we have current assessed value and projections about where that goes, and then overlaid on that is what we plan to invest in each of these districts during that time period, and what we calculate that, what we project that to be, I guess is a better way to say it, will result in increases in assessed value. And those are two different lines, because if you just assume a 3% growth on the base, if we make a dollar investment in a particular area, we would expect that to be leveraged a certain amount, and then move the base, and then that grows at a certain rate. So it's overlaid. Those two things are overlaid in these numbers. And by making increased investments, so if you increase your investment in Central East Side or in South Waterfront, we're assuming that has an impact on assessed value above just the base growth rate.
And what are the two or three things that can happen in the out years that cause you to lose sleep that would change these forecasts? What are the variables that we'll be watching that could make these numbers go up or down?
I do think the main issue is always the way the market works and what the pace of development is, and so it's going to go in cycles. It's not going to go in a straight line. And so the timing of our investments and what, like I said, what private investment it attracts, I think, will be dependent on what's happening in the market at that time, and it could be higher or lower based on that. I think, you know, if you look at the cycles, they go up and down. The trend lines usually tend to go up, but it's almost invariably not going to be these numbers, but it could just as easily be higher as it is lower. And these calculations just distribute the gains that we've talked about across the main taxing jurisdictions based on the current formulas for how those monies get allocated. And then the next table, I just want to once again return everybody to the question of affordable housing. As we mentioned, this was one of the goals of this urban renewal area package. So as you can see, this is a net increase in investment in affordable housing. You can see where those funds come from. It obviously, there's a dramatic increase in the affordable housing investment in North McAdam, and that, along with the slight increase in Central East Side and us shifting current dollars in the remainder of South Park blocks, that offsets the loss of affordable housing investment that would have come from the education renewal area. And so you see a total nominal gain of investment of $3.5 million. But because the investments are accelerated, meaning they happen sooner than they would have under the education renewal area, the present value calculation actually makes it a higher number. So we get money for affordable housing sooner. We get more money sooner, and that's why the present value calculation is higher.
Do you have similar tables for parks and transportation?
We don't, but I can. But I can. We can certainly get you that information.
Thank you.
Yeah. So now I'm going to dive in a little bit more specifically to each of the urban renewal areas and talk about some of the priorities there. Within North McAdam, this is a high level picture of kind of the difference between what we can accomplish under the current scenario and what we can accomplish with an amended urban renewal area. I think it's clear it's a dramatic difference. North McAdam right now is without the deadline looming of 2019-2020 and the lack of an expansion area and development just restarting in South Waterfront, there really isn't the prospect for significant tax increment generation over the remaining life of it. With the additional 5 years and including the expansion area, that we believe gives us a chance to capture a lot of development and the resulting value. So it allows us to do things like build Southwest Bond, which is going to be a major north-south throughway for the development of the north part of the district. Additional money is available for open space or other infrastructure needs. It allows us to have the money to invest in growth around Portland State. Money to support business growth in the area, and then last but not least, we have a significant increase in affordable housing from $9 million under the current projections to $47 million under the amended scenario.
Patrick, can you elaborate on what kind of business/redevelopment loans you might be making?
So this is, as you know from our budget, and we're in the budget season, so we'll be revisiting this topic, but we have a number of line items in our budgets that allow for us to make business loans as opportunities arise, and that so that could be businesses that want to move into the district, and we could lend them money for the build out of their space or for the acquisition of space. But then it also allows us to make strategic investments in real estate projects that might have a financing gap. It may be that there's parking needed, and the parking is the gap, and so we can put the investment in parking to allow development proceed. But this is more of an opportunity fund for those type of investments.
So this is money set aside for investments. You're not quite at this point. You don't know exactly what they're going to be.
Exactly. And like I said, all of our budgets have these line items to varying degrees. As a relative percentage, this is actually pretty small relative to some of the other budgets that we have.
I notice you don't have contingency on either of these sides. How much was the contingency at the status quo, and how much with the amended?
We have that number handy.
We don't usually carry the status quo. It was 20 million.
Yeah, I think we talked about this week. There's 20 million at the end of the life of this district under the amended scenario. I don't know that we had really much in the way of an ending balance. But we can clarify that for you.
It's essentially unallocated, right?
Yeah.
Patrick,
call it contingency or.
But at the end of the life of the, with this status quo scenario, there isn't much left. We're basically spending as much as we can of those dollars.
I think you said, just to clarify, on the amended side, that's the amended North McAdam urban renewal area, assuming, as of today, there is no agreement with ZRZ.
Right. So for the sake of these numbers, it assumes minimal development on the ZRZ property.
And what percentage of the URA is the Sidell property?
Well, it's 30, I'm going to do the math in my head, 35 acres out of how many acres? 400 acres?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Less than 10%.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned earlier, as a result of public input, we spent a lot of time refining the plans for affordable housing in North McAdam, and we think we have a much better approach to affordable housing as a result. I mentioned the increase in resources, so we are projecting increasing the set aside from 30% to 42%. Some of that's backloaded, so it's additional $38 million, as I mentioned, the 9 going to 47. But the other thing that we've done is get more detail about specific projects. And right now, I think we can talk about a very specific project on a parcel we own called Parcel 3, which is in River Place, which is in the URA. And you can see the numbers up there, but it would be roughly 200 affordable units. We would have a minimum of 62 of those units would be at 0 to 30% MFI. That can break ground really as soon as we can move the project along, and that date's that's likely to be a 2017 date. And then we would begin making plans to acquire a site for a second project. That would happen much later in the district, because we would be spending a big chunk of our dollars up front for the first project. We would have to wait a few years for new dollars to be generated, and then we would have a second project later on in life of district. That would be roughly similar scale, but would certainly, we would at a minimum, finish the remainder of the 0 to 30 units that were part of the original goals. In doing that, we would exceed the overall 0 to 60 goals and meet or exceed the 0 to 30 goals on that. Lastly, before, I know you have a question, we have an affordable housing provision in our development agreement with Portland State. Any other development agreements that are executed within this district would have language around affordable housing as well.
A couple of points just for clarification. Under your projections for the urban renewal area, you have the TIF to fund this, so you don't have to actually do something exotic like obtain a bond or something
Correct.
Else, right? We
Correct.
Can just move the TIF forward.
Correct. Correct.
And secondly, you have a line here about PHB and partners working to secure operating subsidies. So just to be clear, what we're talking about is things like Section 8, project-based Section 8 vouchers, VASH vouchers, McKinney funds. What the council would be directing the Housing Bureau, PDC, and to secure the subsidies so you can buy down the rents to 0 to 30, correct?
Correct.
What is the nature of the affordable housing agreement with Portland State? Is that for University Place?
So the agreement with Portland State, in short, requires them to offer to the city to sell units in any residential housing project that they do, which would most likely be on University Place. It doesn't relate to student housing, but it relates to any other residential development. So Central East Side.
Just before you move on from that,
sure.
I'm looking at the ordinance. It doesn't reference that particular allocation or that plan. How is that set in stone?
I'm sorry, allocation for
this project, the Parcel 3 project,
proposed
and
allocation
with those allocations. How can we be sure that that's what's going to happen?
It's in the plan. It's been the plan document.
It's in an appendix, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in the report to the resolution, which is where we put all the detail
appendix
in there.
B, I think.
Yeah.
And don't we need to have that in the council directs?
Well, it goes
with the
plan.
You're right. Okay.
Yeah. Rides with the plan.
So those can't be changed without further council action to shift the numbers.
If it's in the plan, we can't change it without further council action. Okay.
Thank you.
So Central East Side, once again, somewhat of a similar before and after scenario. The numbers aren't as dramatic, but you can see Central East Side has limited resources left. the bulk of these resources we plan to use to acquire some strategic sites in Central East Side and then try and generate additional resources from the sale of those sites, and we have some other money allocated, as you can see. The amended district gives us more opportunity dollars to accomplish the objectives I talked about earlier. Much of this relates to how we support development along the new light rail corridor, the Clinton Triangle I talked about. But you can also see some of the other investments that we would be able to make. We do believe that the neighborhood needs to at some point address parking. We're not exactly sure what the project is or what our actual role is, but as the district grows and attracts more jobs, and it is one of the main jobs districts in the city, we are going to have to figure out some solution to parking, and that may require us to make an investment in some kind of structured parking. So money is set aside for that, and then you can see it gives us some more opportunity to put money to work in supporting businesses and other individual projects, which we know we're going to need some kind of gap financing if we're going to focus on commercial industrial development in that district. And then it does increase the affordable housing numbers from 4 million to 10 million. Commissioner Novick.
Patrick, you said you might acquire property, which you then might sell. Yeah. But the income from potential selling of property isn't included in these projections. It would be money that we'd get subsequently, right?
So the money does come back in. It's still TIF, and then it has the same restrictions. So, but let me just add, do we have a sale of ODOT blocks included in our? So we budget it in a conservative manner typically, so we don't include in our, if you can picture our budget, top has the resources, there's a line for property income. We don't often include that as we forecast out just because of the uncertainty in land sales, but that would in fact increase the pool of money we have available to invest in the district. And we would, depending on what kind of outcomes we want to see on the ODOT blocks, we would certainly expect there to be a return to the PDC that could be reinvested.
So why is there no increase in the amount allocated to parks in this plan either?
Well, I think we have flexibility on some of the business and redevelopment loans what happens as part of a particular redevelopment. Also the investment around the Clinton station, that those dollars could include some type of assistance there. But the Washington Monroe Community Center money has been sitting in our budget for I think as long as I've been at PDC. So I would assume that I would also say that money is there to help parks move forward on whatever community center plans exist for the southeast.
Well, it's grossly inadequate, and that's why it's still sitting there, because you can't do very much with $1 million. So it's interesting to see other areas getting more money from the proposal on this side and no discussion of what the parks needs are.
Well, we might want to hear
Commissioner, we can be happy to come back with a breakdown of the historical expenditures in the Central East Side. PDC funded the entire Esplanade. So if you look at historically what's been invested in Central East Side, I think the picture might look a little different.
And can you point me to the place in this plan where it talks about affordable housing in the Central East Side, and particularly in the expansion area?
So right now, so we have PHP is actually working on current project in the Central East Side that will add how many hundred some odd units in the Central East Side? Yeah. So anyway, so there's a current project that's using up PHP dollars now. And the Clinton Triangle, assuming that the Southeast Quadrant plan or comp plan comes back with us allowing housing to happen there, I think we would work with PHP with their dollars, as well as I think other incentives we might be able to provide to develop affordable housing within that triangle. Beyond that, I don't think we can get more specific until we.
Where in the plan does it talk about that? I'm just looking for a page number.
It's in the report.
It's in the where in the report.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
I don't think that's right. So if I could at some point before next week get the information about that. That was one of my concerns that I voiced at the hearing last year, was if we are going to expand, let's make sure that we have appropriate policy language in the, and I apologize, I was looking at the wrong report there, so it could well be 26, sorry. We need strong policy language to make, Commissioner Fish has inserted in the North McAdam plan, there needs to be similar language in the Central East Side to make sure if we're choosing to do these extensions and amendments, what is the public benefit that we're going to get? Mm-hmm. So
I had a slide ahead of here I could have clicked to, but we, so there's, you can see an additional 55 new affordable units. I think as we've talked about, I think in the Central East Side, given that the numbers go from 4 to 10 million, still not a big pot of money, I do think this is a conversation that should also happen within the Southeast Quadrant conversation. I think we have an opportunity, given the current zoning, to use our tools there to encourage affordable housing development that isn't as heavily subsidized as it is elsewhere because there's a lot of market interest in developing housing.
Yeah, we also have some other work to do that's not PDC's responsibility but ours. We have an aging fire truck maintenance facility occupying 4 acres of property at a light rail station area. We have to find a new place to do the fire bureau maintenance work in order for that property to be freed up for housing or anything else. But that's our work to do, not PDC's.
Given the focus in the Central East Side has not been housing, in fact, it's been to try to minimize the amount of housing, I want to be sure that if this expansion happens, there's appropriate policy language to guide future investments as well as to inform the Southeast Quadrant plan. So if that's not there, then maybe at the next hearing I'll have an amendment. Because it's not 26 in this one.
So I wanted to spend most of the time on North McAdam and Central East Side. That's really what I have today in terms of an overview. We can answer more questions. We can bring up the invited testimony as well as the folks who have signed up to testify.
So I have I've read some of the testimony we got ahead of the hearing today, Patrick. So I want to ask you a couple questions while you're still in the hot seat, and we'll bring you back later. One of the questions was, if we move forward with Parcel 3, and then at some point in North McAdam, we have a second site identified for affordable housing, what is the current framework for deciding the allocation between deeply subsidized units at 0 to 30 and other units at 30 to 60, recognizing that as when we use TIF, it has to be 60 and below to be eligible under the 30% set-aside policy, but what's the mechanism for deciding the next allocation and split between deeply affordable and affordable in any future development?
Well, I would start by saying that the goals are the goals, and so we would use the dollars we have to meet the goals that have been established. I think so beyond that, as kind of our guiding principle, then it comes in the budget process, and so the money that we send to PHB that appears in our budget, and you're our budget committee, that you would have obviously have the ability to direct it there. And then I can invite Tracy to come up and answer the rest of that question, but I also think the obligation would also be on PHB's part to be accountable to the objectives of council in that. So I think it's kind of it's the typical accountability in any budget that we have and bring to you.
Okay. And I think we're likely to hear today that in the next development, we need to continue to focus at where the need is. So that'll be affirmed. The other thing is in the ordinance and the attached report, it has boilerplate at page 9 that says essentially the 30% set aside policy applies. And on page 28, it talks about the modified set aside policy that was the result of planning and sustainability's push. Are we clear that it's the set-aside policy as modified by the recommendation of planning?
You mean the 30% of all
the net of 40, the proposal that says it's 30 but 50-50 split at the back end, which is not technically the policy. We can argue about whether the policy is a floor or a ceiling. I believe it's a floor. Is it clear enough in this document that, in fact, we are modifying the policy to provide for the additional resources at the back end.
I mean, I think we've been clear in the report and our intent. I think we've shown that. But it would have to get affirmed when budgets get approved.
Right.
So I think that's where the legal, if you want to get technical, that's where the legal authority is when the budget gets approved. And so I think that's direction that can be provided to by our board as well as City Council to our board.
Just so we have a record on
this.
Again, at pages 28 and 29, you have the specific language, most of which I can read, except there's a draft through part of that. But most of it I can read. And that makes clear that we're modifying the 30% set-aside policy to create the additional resources. And that's reflected in the chart and the text. And I just want to be clear that in effect, modifies the reference to the set-aside policy in page 9,
yes.
Which is
sorry,
the generic
if that's what you're getting, yes.
But what we're saying is, for this district, we're actually committing to a higher goal.
Yeah, and as you like to remind us quite often, the set-aside doesn't really limit us going up, right? So in some respects, it doesn't change the set-aside policy. It just, this is like in interstate, we're now well, you know, spending well above the set-aside, the goal. So set aside allows us to go up, right? So it's consistent with set aside, but yes, the commitment is in that document, but it's going to need to be reaffirmed when we go back for budgets.
So. Other questions for Patrick?
I have one request and then one big general question. My request is, would you mind giving Art Pierce a minute or two at this point to explain the significance of the transportation investments in the Central East Side?
Sure.
Would that be okay, colleagues?
Come on up.
We worked on this stuff many years ago, so I'm quite familiar with all the plans for South Waterfront.
Right.
Central East Side.
Central East Side.
I can speak.
I'm sorry.
You can talk about both.
Oddly enough, I'm well versed in both. So starting with South Waterfront. As you all remember, in 2009, we adopted the North McAdam Transportation Investment Strategy. And so there's a number of transportation projects down in South Waterfront that are very key to supporting the development outcomes down in South Waterfront. The near-term ones, one of the very key ones is, of course, the extension of Bond that allows us to complete the Moody Bond couplet, really primary mobility within the district. One of the next items that's coming up is in the very southern end of that district, what we call the South Portal, or it's at the Bancroft-McAdam intersection. So that's another key element that's been identified really since the formation of the urban renewal area as a district in the mid-90s. So that's been one that we've been tracking for many years. And so those are probably some of the key ones coming up. There's a number of smaller investments that are also contemplated for the district. But of course, urban renewal resources are very, very important to allow us to make both of those investments possible.
I got a briefing the other day from OHSU, and what I learned is that the Moody Bond investment is extremely important to them to connect the streetcar to their workforce on the Schnitzer campus. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way the district functions right now, in part, is we're sort of waiting for, as the whole district evolves and the Zidell site to redevelop, we're really, really reliant on the two-way Moody portion of the street system. The next phase, and certainly for us to have enough vehicular capacity for the district, we need to have Moody function is in the southbound direction and Bond function in the northbound direction. So that's definitely crucial to making the district work. There is a contemplated sort of realignment of streetcar right around the base of the tram, where currently it comes along sort of through the plaza area at the base of the tram, and so that's contemplated as part of the sort of evolution of the system there. Okay, so on the Central East Side.
Well, before you move from that, my understanding is that the proposed allocation does allow enough money to build Bond, but does not allow enough money to do the South Portal. Is that correct?
That's correct. So the money that's currently listed in the budget is what's contemplated for Bond. We don't have, we're just beginning the process of designing Bond. So it's what's based on past projections of the cost of that project. We're just beginning the engineering really as we speak.
But you're hopeful that it'll cover it?
I'm very hopeful that it will cover it, but I don't know that we know enough about all the engineering challenges to know for certain.
And how about the South Portal?
And then on the South Portal, the line item that is the $7 million line item that's listed as parks and transportation infrastructure is part of what was contemplated to help support the South Portal once we work farther through that design. For the South Portal, it already is on an SDC list, so it is something that is eligible for some portion of it to be funded through SDCs. It also is a, because we've known about it really for the whole life of the district, as properties have developed, such as Prometheus, we've requested of them, they have provided non-remonstrance clauses within their agreements of their platting, so they are anticipated to be a contributor to the project. But we don't believe that we have enough resources between the SDCs and the private properties contribution to do it without also TIF resources. So that's something that is anticipated as a need for the district in the coming years.
So you were figuring that that parks infrastructure was for the South Portal. I was considering that it was for right. parks and greens and the Greenway. That's interesting.
Thank I think you. That is, it was, as I understood, it's a generic line talking about both parks and infrastructure, not necessarily just parks itself.
Well, it's also the case that we could apply for grant funds like we did with Moody.
For sure. Yeah, so certainly the precedent in Moody, we did very, very well. In fact, we were able to do with very little urban renewal, if any, actually.
In Moody. Any,
none,
yeah.
none at all with that, based on really making a really aggressive chase federally and getting a Tiger Grant. So there's always possibilities. The great benefit, I think, is that for both parks and transportation, having that as a generic resource allows us to leverage additional external resources. It's also quite possible for parks to chase external resources and use that as a leverage fund to do that same chase. So
that's not our assessment.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
But what was the total cost of Moody, do you remember?
$56 million.
Yeah, so if we'd budgeted for that item, it would have blown the budget of the old district, but we were able to obtain resources that aren't just from TIF. Not all progress is paid for with TIF, even though we love paying for it with TIF.
Well, we got it for some stimulus money, too, for it, right?
Right.
We got stimulus
grant.
Money and the Tiger Grant?
Oh, we did
grant?
Get some. The Tiger Grant was stimulus money. Well, at this point, it's a now ongoing program, right?
Right. I think the days of large federal appropriations are certainly gone for the next few years. So I don't think that we should rely on that.
Rely, no. But, again, we should apply because Tiger is still an active
program. Another round of Tiger grants will be announced soon. We don't think we're ready necessarily for the South Portal in terms of having a new design to propose, but it is the type of project that we certainly will pursue external resources for.
And if you look at the timeline, just availability of TIF for a lot of this, we're still 3-4 years out from this money being available. So it is... So the time, so we don't know. The timing, the environment could be different. And South Portal is something that would definitely be, at least 4 years out if we were to take it on. So
so for Central East Side, much of the infrastructure needs is in that southern end in supporting the expansion area, as well as really where the district connects on to Powell Boulevard. So that's where there's a lot of challenges, transportation infrastructure challenges there. So the Milwaukee-Powell intersection itself is probably the primary investment that's contemplated there. There is additional street connection infrastructure that's needed through the Northwest Natural parcels and some of those other parcels in that Southern Triangle area. So that is a variety of infrastructure that's needed to support the redevelopment of those parcels in the southern end there.
So it might actually be possible to improve that intersection?
We believe it can be, yes.
not sure there's any way you can get worse.
I don't think you can make it much worse, exactly. Yeah.
So you can see that in that slide I brought up, that the transportation improvements there, that's what Art's highlighting.
Thank you, Art.
Yeah, we won't talk about parking essentially side, but that's a whole
other
thing.
That's another conversation.
Thanks, Art. Okay. Other questions for Patrick?
Yes. Patrick,
oh, that's right. Big question.
Here's my big hairy question for you, which is that a few weeks ago we had a discussion about the Portland building, and we were told that we need to spend something around $100 million both to make it habitable and to prevent from falling down in the event of an earthquake. And we were had a bit of a discussion about where we're going to come up with $100 million. And one of my suggestions was, well, maybe we just shut down all the urban renewal areas, and how much of that could we pay for it by early defeasance of urban renewal areas? And so it's not that everybody jumped to endorse that idea, but we didn't have too many ideas around the table. And I asked you last week to compare these amendments not with status quo, but with early defeasance, or defeasance as early as possible of all of the URAs. And I really appreciated you actually got that information to me yesterday. I'm actually going to pass the sheet out to my colleagues. And it says that if we shut everything down as soon as possible compared to what's contemplated in this plan, we will wind up actually getting about $100 million in general fund. And so My assumption is that even if we adopt all of the amendments, that doesn't mean that if nobody has a better idea about how to pay for the Portland building 6 months from now, we can't decide as a council, well, you know what? We actually just can't afford to do urban renewal anymore. We need to spend another Portland building instead. So my question for you is, at what point and what actions are these decisions irrevocable? At what point, I mean, are there actions like signing development agreements that mean that we can no longer think about early defeasance as a way to get more general fund money?
So the answer is there's a kind of a nuanced answer to that. I think every single day you get more and more locked in, and so how much debt you issue really is the ultimate indicator. But yeah, we have a development agreement with PSU. Mm-hmm. When the urban renewal area, or if the urban renewal gets approved, I should say, then we now have obligations to PSU of a certain amount, or working on projects with PSU. I know people, there's sensitivity around the topic. It's been so projects in concert with PSU. So then that gets triggered, and that's totaling $19 million right now. You would have that kind of all over the place, kind of slowly adding up. You'd have obligations that would require you to borrow, and then you'd be locked in there. So I'm not going to say that it's at some point it's irrevocable, like everything is off the table. But I do think we are beginning to make plans that I've laid out here that would, within a year or two, would lock us into these to the entire package here.
But the PSU agreement, that would happen automatically as soon as
that would happen automatically plan. Since it's already, yeah. So we're coming to you because it's a PSU PDC agreement. So we're coming to you. Council approves your amendments. If you approve that amendment, then that does trigger our obligations under that agreement. I would say that we have other obligations within the urban renewal areas that we would probably lay on the table that would also kind of constrain what we could do in terms of shutting down urban renewal areas. You know, the other thing is, if you look at what we're doing River District, I mean maybe at the end of the day you're what's left is you get to chip away at urban renewal areas if there really is excess AV and do it that way. I know I'm bouncing around, but it's a pretty theoretical question because I think we're more locked in than maybe the question acknowledges.
Patrick, the chart you handed out, just so I'm clear, if you were to just take this this abstract concept, and Steve said that it didn't generate a lot of enthusiasm, I don't think it generated a second, but it's worth, I think, to illustrate a point, it's worth having this discussion. The loss to categories of investment that the city is committed to is pretty staggering. Mm-hmm. Under this. So let me just be clear. Your memo says that the loss to housing would be $84 million?
Correct.
So that shuts down affordable housing investment as we know it. And the loss to PDC economic development is $216
million? Well, it's to everything else. So that's everything non-housing. So it's not.
But that includes the loan programs, the
infrastructure,
the
anything that we have in our line item for parks or for infrastructure for redevelopment projects.
And you total that at $300 million.
The total is $300. So the difference between take 84 goes to housing. So it's the remainder. What is that?
216.
Yeah. So
I guess I would say if we move to a complete defeasance of urban renewal, I'll bring an amendment to say that we'll take the first $84 million off the top, put back into housing, because I think we all agree that's a first priority of the city. But it will come at the cost of no economic development, and that may end up having some impact on jobs and growing the pie. But there's a time and a place to have that debate.
Okay, so I'm going
to. I know you want to go to.
I do want to get.
I just
our
have one question,
up, so please.
And that is on page 31 of the North McAdam report. It says that the total TIF that we're now expecting is $122 million, but then it says that the project staffing is $15,200,000. Is that right? $15,200,000 is the amount?
Over the remaining life of the district, so that's roughly 10, 11 years of work on projects of significance. So that's, I mean, for a district of that size with number of projects, that's... You know, that's what that equates to. So it's
about $1.5 million a year in administrative costs. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, Patrick, I know I will have will more questions for you later,
let's
get our panelists up. Our first three folks are here from our partner local governments, David Wine from Portland Public Schools, Brian Newman from Oregon Health and Sciences University, and Kevin Reynolds from Portland State University. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And whatever order you'd like to go in, David.